today's verse. I'd just like to say that Mother Kuti's kirtans have a nice bounce to them, don't they? She has a nice bounce to her kirtans. They're very nice to dance to. So today we're reading 9th canto, chapter 16, Lord Parasaram Destroys the Ruling Class. Today's text number 9. Word meanings, yea, those who, Arjunasya of Kartavirya Arjuna, Suta, sons, Rajan, O Maharaj Pariksit, Smaranta, always remembering, Swapitu Vadam, their fathers having been killed by Parasaram, Ramavirya Parabhuta, defeated by the superior power of Lord Parasaram, Labire, achieved Sharma happiness, na not Kwachit at any time. Yerjunasya Sutarajan Smaranta Swapituvadam Rama Viraya Prabhuta Vere Sharmana Kwachit Yerjunasya Sutarajan Smaranta Swapiturvadam Rama Viraya Prabhuta Vere Sharmana Kwachit Yerjunasya Sutarajan Smaranta Swapiturvadam Rama Viraya Parabhuta Vere Sharmana Kwachit. Ladies. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear King Parikshit, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, who were defeated by the superior strength of Parasaram, never achieved happiness, for they always remembered the killing of their father. Purport. Jamadagni was certainly very powerful due to his austerity, but because of a slight offense by his poor wife, Renuka, he ordered that she be killed. This certainly was a sinful act, and therefore Jamadagni was killed by the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, as described herein. Lord Parasuram was also infected by sin because of killing Kartavirya Arjuna, although this was not very offensive. Therefore, whether one be Kartavirya Arjuna, Lord Parasuram, Jamadagni, or whoever one may be, one must act very cautiously and sagaciously, otherwise one must suffer the results of sinful activities. This is a lesson we receive from Vedic literature. Om Ajnana Tamarandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Yesterday, at the end of class, Pushkar Prabhu asked a very interesting question to Chaturatma Prabhu, who was giving the class. He inquired about why this history of Renuka being attracted to the Gandharva and his lady followers, why this was included in this discussion. Something like that, yes, like that. Now, of course, knowing Pushkar Prabhu's scholarship and his knowledge of Shastra, his intuition as a devotee, we all should have picked up on that perhaps he was acting as a harbinger of some truth to come by asking this question. And indeed, he was acting as a harbinger of the truth, because in today's verse, we get a very important lesson. Prabhupada calls it, this is the lesson we receive from the Vedic literature. He elevates it to such a important thing. And so, yes, in this today's verse, we're getting the answer to his question. Yes, a lesson was meant to come, and it's coming right away. And that lesson is that we should act. Prabhupada says one must act very cautiously and sagaciously. Particularly, this refers to actions in interactions with others. Interactions with others is very important. Actually, it can make or break us in many ways. It's the cause of our success or failure. It's the cause of us being in Krishna consciousness or being in Maya. It's the cause of us being happy or sad in life. How we interact with others. And not just with devotees. We often talk about the dangers of offenses among devotees and interactions among devotees, how we have to be so careful in that regard. But the lesson here is not just in regard to devotees, our interactions with devotees, but our interactions with all others. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, I was giving a class at the Krishna House in Gainesville. And I think you all know Ali Krishna Dasi. Ali Krishna. She's in charge of the study program that we have there, that they have there. Actually, at the end of that class that I was giving, Ali Krishna chastised me. She chastised me, and I think rightly so. I think rightly so. Because I was speaking about interactions with others, devotees' interactions with others, but I drew a distinction between interactions with devotees and interactions with other people, non-devotees. I drew a distinction. She said, no, why are you making such a distinction? That's not how a devotee should act. We should not see distinctions, and we should not act with distinctions between devotees and non-devotees. And as I said, I think that she was right to chastise me like that, although it was a little embarrassing in front of everybody there. But anyway, it puts me in a position of being here today and talking about this subject of interactions with others. And with your permission, I'd like to do it in a way that's also a little different than we do our regular classes. I'd like to present some points to you and get some feedback, get some discussion as we go through the class rather than just waiting till the end. I'm going to put out there some ideas about this subject matter, and then if some thought or comment comes to your mind, you can say, yes. Yes.
Some people don't know they're devotees. We not recognize them as devotees. And then he gives everyone should be honored, given respect mentally. But to put everyone in the same category, that's not Rupa Goswami's teachings.
Okay, very good, yes. Mm-hmm. There's distinctions how we interact, but that those instructions cover everybody, not just the devotees. Yes, that's very good. I have different categories of things that I wanted to present to you here. And why don't we start with our everyday interactions? Because Srila Prabhupada actually gave us some examples in his behavior about how we can act cautiously and sagaciously. I think probably one of the things that strikes me first is if you listen to Prabhupada's morning walks, a lot of times he'd be walking and he'd meet somebody and he would greet them. How? Do you know how he'd greet them? Yeah. He'd say, good morning. Although, why would he say that? Why would he have that kind of an approach to somebody? Why didn't you tell him Hare Krishna? Do you have any? He did say Hare Krishna many times, yes. But why would he say good morning? Because he's a gentleman, yeah. Yeah, actually, that's another one of the famous quotes that Srila Prabhupada has about how devotees interact with others. He says that act in such a way that they will see we are of ideal character. Act in such a way that they will see that we are of ideal character. And then when Prabhupada was asked, how do you recognize a Vaishnava? Srila Prabhupada replied, he is a perfect gentleman. And so in our dealings with others, just in ordinary dealings with others, Srila Prabhupada is stressing, and as Pundarik Prabhu was pointing out, Srila Rupa Goswami also says, there has to be some kind of a mental appreciation or mental honoring of one, even one that's not a devotee. There has to be some kind of thing. And that's that mental that consciousness is going to be important because, as pointed out in a course in Vaishnava etiquette that Bhakti Chiru Swami gave, he says that the consciousness of a devotee is manifest by his actions. And so our mental state, the state of our consciousness, is going to affect how we interact with others. And we should at least be in the position, as instructed by Srila Rupa Goswami, of mentally honoring other living beings. And that's going to be manifest in different ways in which we greet them. Sometimes it may be Hare Krishna, as Pushkar points out. Other times, as Srila Prabhupada did, he greeted people with a good morning on a walk like that when he came across people. So I think this is the first thing that we need to appreciate in terms of how we interact with others. Does anybody have any other thoughts on this that they want to share? Mm-hmm.
Bhaviseshu, Jisatsu Cha Premaitri Kipopeksha, Karoti Samadhyama, the definition that the Madhyamadhikari has to see. He's friendly, prema, he feels prema toward Krishna, but Maitri, friends toward all the living. Kripa, or he's friends with the devotees. Kripa means he shows mercy. Prema Maitri Kipopeksha. Upeksha means he neglects, though, the non-devotees, or those who are inimical, or at least the inimical persons. Balisheshu, like that, the innocent, who, or rather, yeah, the innocent, balisheshu means childlike or innocent persons. He shows friendship and mercy toward them, right?
Yes. Actually, when one has knowledge, one has a knowledge of Krishna consciousness, then that's also going to be reflected in how he interacts with other people. And one of the primary things that knowledge in Krishna consciousness is going to do is mentioned by in the verse you described, of having compassion for others. Rather than taking a position of superiority or becoming very proud, there is an overwhelming inclination towards compassion in relationship with others. This is exemplified in the character of devotee, and Srila Prabhupada was speaking about this in a lecture that he gave in Vrindavan, 1976, on the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says here, he's talking about Nrisingadev addressing Pallad Maharaj. So here Nrisingadev addressing Pallado Bhadra, perfect gentleman. In India it is called Bhadraloka. Bhadra means a perfect gentleman, Bhadraloka. That is the general etiquette, to address somebody as Bhadraloka. Especially in Bengal, is very common. It is very common word, Bhadra. And in other parts also. So Bhadra means perfect gentleman. Just see, Pallad was perfect gentleman. A devotee is perfect gentleman. Why? Now, because he has developed all good qualities. That is Bhadra. And so, as we practice devotional service, we attain, hoping to come to this level of being Bhadra, a perfect gentleman, gentle person, let's say, so that our good qualities can be on display, not just because we want to display them to people, but because we want to attract them to Krishna. We want to attract them to Srila Prabhupada. Actually, this is one of the points that Bhakti Chuswami makes in his course on Vaishnava etiquette also, is that he says, Srila Prabhupada's reputation depends on our behavior. In his compassion, he lifted us up from very degraded backgrounds. He was even criticized by the less intelligent in India for doing so. In order to maintain Srila Prabhupada's good name, our behavior should be very exemplary. And so we have a responsibility, as I say, with knowledge. We have a responsibility in being disciples and followers of Srila Prabhupada to protect his good name, that he risked everything for himself so that we don't spoil it in improper interactions with others. There's a very interesting quote that Srila Prabhupada, from one of Srila Prabhupada's letters, where he says how even a small action can ruin one's reputation. This is in a letter to Shankarshan, December 31st, 1972. He says, but we should never steal anything like money, food, water, gasoline, etc., just to enhance our service to Krishna. That is too much dangerous, and if we are caught, then all our work is finished. Just like in India recently, this Bal Yogi Guru Maharaji was detected by the customs authorities attempting to smuggle some small items into India. By this one tiny incident, his entire effort for preaching, even he is rascal number one, and his preaching is nonsense, even so, the example is there. His work is ruined now, and he is practically finished, as the government will not grant him a passport to leave India. So we shall always be careful to avoid any kind of jeopardizing our high standing in society by some foolish and small act of illegal stealing. Again, not just the reputation of Srila Prabhupada, but all his work can be ruined by thoughtless actions in interactions with others. So let's see what we have here. Anybody have any reactions, anything to add as we go through? No? Okay. Prabhupada says here in a letter to Patit Udaran, December 12, 1974, a devotee is always ideal in behavior. So we all have to cooperate amongst ourselves. Otherwise, what will people think if we ourselves fight one another? A devotee is always ideal in behavior. Sometimes the familiarity, what about contempt? Breeds contempt. Familiarity breeds contempt. Sometimes that creeps in our association amongst ourselves. We fall victim to this infighting, which is also very dangerous to the mission. Again, we have this responsibility because the world is observing us. So, everyday interactions in preaching also, it's very important how we interact in the preaching field. And to exemplify this, I want to read two quotes from this book on book distribution. This is my request, which has quotes from Srila Prabhupada, because he gives us some guidelines how in our preaching work we also have to be very careful about our interactions. He says, the real preaching is selling books. You should know the tactic how to sell without irritating. What your lecture will do for 3 minutes, but if he reads one page, his life may be turned. We don't want to irritate anyone, however. If he goes away by your aggressive tactics, then you are nonsense. And it is your failure. Neither you could sell a book, neither he would remain. But if he buys a book, that is the real successful preaching. So, in our preaching endeavors, also we should be careful to interact with people in ways that give them the most opportunity to become Krishna conscious. There's another letter to Sri Govinda, December 25th, 1972. The Brahmins are always truthful, even to their enemies. There is sufficient merit in our books that if you simply describe them sincerely to anyone, they will buy. That art you must develop, not art of lying. Convince them to give by your preaching the absolute truth, not by tricking. This is more mature stage of development of Krishna consciousness. So again, we are expected as we advance in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada says here, come to a more mature stage, that even the stark truths of Krishna consciousness, and I say stark truths in relation to what's going on in the world around us today, even those stark truths can be presented in such a way that people will be able to appreciate them and understand them, rather than finding some excuse on our part to not have to accept the truth of Krishna consciousness. So that's an important part of our Krishna consciousness as well. Of course, we do interact with devotees. That's a major part of our lives, interacting with devotees. And so there's much instruction on how to, in our personal interactions, avoid things that cause trouble in our Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness of others. So to illustrate this, I want to read some quotes from a book by Radhana Swami called Nectar Drops. That was lent to me by Radhikesh Prabhu. I will return it to you. but he has some very nice statements in here in three areas: misunderstandings, fault finding, and offenses. So let me just read these. They're very short quotes he has. Here's one about authorities. Authorities often come in conflict with their charges. When your authorities misunderstand you, it is not at all that bad. Just learn from that experience and carry on in devotional service. And so there's a certain amount of tolerance and sort of forbearance that's necessary when one is practicing any discipline or interacting with any people, whether it's in our family or if it's among the devotees. And so misunderstandings will arise. That's the nature of this world. But when they do, our job is to try to be forbearant and learn from the experience and carry on with our devotional service. Radhana Swami says, our motto should be, I seek not to be understood, but to understand. So that's something on understanding. Fault finding. I thought this one was particularly interesting. To see faults in others contaminates your heart. To see faults in others contaminates your heart. So it's not just something that finding fault with others is not just something external in what they're doing, whether you're correct or incorrect about what they're doing, but it actually damages us. It actually damages our own heart when we see faults in others. If a person is criticizing a Vaishnava, then that is a sign that Krishna has withdrawn his mercy, and that is the means by which Krishna withdraws his mercy. So we fall into this kind of a fault-finding mentality and criticizing others, then we should realize that our even ability to do that, our engagement in that, is a sign that Krishna has withdrawn his mercy or is withdrawing his mercy from us, because this is the means by which that happens, falling into this fault-finding mentality. And then offenses. There's one here that I particularly like. It says that before we commit offenses to devotees, the stage comes in which we feel ourselves better than the other devotees. So it's he's examining here like the mental progression of offensive interaction with others, and it has to do with an arising in the heart and mind that actually I'm better than this person, therefore I can justly criticize them. Which is the exact opposite that the devotee takes of trying to be the humble servant of each and every person. He goes on, he said, offenses take away your service. The worst is that it takes away our propensity to serve. When we are offensive in our interaction with devotees, it takes away our very life. What is our life? Our life is meant for service to the Supreme Lord and his devotees. And we need to be inclined to do that, because it's not always something that comes spontaneous to us in our stage of devotional service, in our neophyte stage of devotional service. But if the inclination is taken away, then where are we at? What's left for us? Well, if the propensity to do this service is taken away, then everything is taken away from us. And offenses and interactions with others have a tendency to do that. Now, it's not just active offenses that take place. Actually, there are passive offenses that we can engage in also, particularly in terms of hearing. In terms of hearing. If we hear or give submissive oral reception to criticism of devotees, some kind of lying propaganda about devotees, or even gossip that's true. Some activities of a devotee may be true, but we can engage in them in terms of gossip, hearing the latest gossip. If we do that, then that's sort of a passive way of being offensive, and it can have very deep consequences. And there's an example from the Ramayana that helps us to understand this, and that is the interaction of Kaikeyi and Mantara. You know the history, it's not something new to everyone. Dasarath wanted to crown Ram. Somehow another, Mantara felt threatened and wronged by this, and therefore she went to Kaikeyi and she started talking to her some lying propaganda. Oh, if Ram becomes king, he's going to kill Bharat, your son. You'll be at a great disadvantage if this happens. And see, Mantara and Kaikeyi had a long relationship. She was her nurse or something, isn't it? She was a nurse, you know. She brought him up like a nurse mother. And so she had some trust there in that relationship. And so therefore, that's where the submissive oral reception came from, was based on the trust. She had a loving trust in relationship. And Mantara misused that trust to put some lying propaganda in her mind. And she listened to it because she had that trust. She was willing to give a submissive ear because of the trust. Just see, we have relationships among each other, friendly relationships for so many years. So we put, that means we have trust with each other. And so therefore we're willing to hear. But if we willingly hear criticism of devotees, it has devastating effects, just like it did in Kaikeyi's heart. She loved Ram, isn't it? She loved Ram very dearly, as much as her own son. She didn't make a distinction that, oh, Bharat's my son, and Ram is the son of Kausalya. She didn't make that distinction. This is my son. She thought like that. So how is it that she could change so much where she would banish him to the forest for 14 years, break Dasarath's heart, her dear husband's heart, and all of the citizens of Ayodhya's hearts? How could she come to that stage? Simply by giving, based on the trust she had with Mantara, hearing that lying propaganda. It destroyed everything. And so that kind of thing can happen to us also, passively. If in the trustful, loving relationships we have among one another, we use that trust to hear criticism of the Vaishnavas. It can ruin everything if we let our interactions come to such a level as that. So, anybody have anything they'd like to add at this point? Yes, Pushpaku.
Sometimes 3 minutes to convince them, and I'm saying anything particularly lying or bad, but isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, is Prabhupada saying that that's too long to spend? I mean, do you understand that?
Well,
sometimes it takes 3 minutes. They're not saying any lying propaganda or anything, you know, false.
Well, what I remember from when that letter came out, it was more like people were thinking that they were taking the attitude that, well, this is me preaching rather than I'm serving Prabhupada preaching. So rather than me trying to put myself in between these people, let me just give them Prabhupada by giving them a book. Deb Younger, what do you
think? Took from that is that you could speak to somebody, so many people that you interact with, but the point is, if the pure devotee speaks to that heart, then that person gets purified because Prabhupada's words are full of nectar from Krishna's lotus feet. So it seemed really easy to understand that it made our job easy. Not to try to convince each person that you meet, because a lot of devotees, when they go out in Sankirtan and they're not experienced, they get caught into arguing, and especially with people of other faiths. And they say, oh, Bhagavad Gita, that's an Indian god, I'm a Christian, and all of a sudden it starts a whole... And you could spend a long time talking to people. 3 minutes is long. As far as, I mean, everybody's different, but I'm quick. I got other people to see out there, so I'm really quick. But my whole consciousness is to get the medicine to the soul, which is the book. It's not me. I just get lucky to be the guy that delivers it. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear from that letter and many other letters that Srila Prabhupada said, he does the preaching. We go out and surrender to the work of it. I do the footwork.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's the point. Actually, because we've sort of returned to the subject of meeting people in a preaching mood, there's one letter that I want to read some excerpts from here, which I think has to be one of the most inspiring letters from Srila Prabhupada that I've ever read. And even last night when I was looking at this, I thought, I sort of choked up. I was just reading to my family, you know. So, but I think it's a great letter. It's a letter to Lynn Ludwig. You know, anybody know that letter? To Lynn Ludwig? It's written in 1972 or 1973. And Lynn Ludwig was a person that had met two devotees in a parking lot in California. And her experience wasn't so nice. And she wrote Srila Prabhupada a letter about it, about her experience. And just see Srila Prabhupada, and my wife made this point last night when we were talking about this, just see how compassionate Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wrote this lady who wrote him a letter about how complaining basically about the devotees' interactions with her. He took the time from this one incident. This is 1972-73. He's the acharya of a worldwide Hare Krishna movement. What does he care? Somebody writes a letter complaining one incident. But he wrote her a 4-page letter to respond to her complaints. I mean, this is Srila Prabhupada. And he says here, your complaint is that you have met two of my young disciples in California, and they appear to you as having, quote, a very negative outlook toward the people they meet. Of course, I do not know the case, what are the circumstances, but kindly forgive my beloved disciples any unkindness or indiscretions on their part. After all, to give up one's life completely for serving the Lord is not so easy thing. And Maya, or the illusory material energy, she tries especially hard to try to get back and entrap those who have left her service to become devotees. So sometimes in the neophyte stage of devotional service, in order to withstand the attack of Maya and remain strong under all conditions of temptation, young and inexperienced devotees will adopt an attitude against those things or persons possibly harmful, threatening to their tender devotional keeper. They may even overindulge in such feelings just to protect themselves, and thus they will appear to some non-devotees who are perhaps themselves still enamored by the material energy of Maya as being negative or pessimistic. And then I'm going to jump to the end of the letter. I think that paragraph probably sounds a lot like me even till today, but to speak of 30 years ago. But this is the part that gets good at the end. Prabhupada says, As you will say, to err is human. So in the neophyte stage, we may always expect some discrepancies are there. Kindly see things in this light and forgive their small mistakes. The big thing is that they have given their life, everything, to Krishna. That is never a mistake. The Prabhupada writes a letter like that. I mean, it's just so inspiring because we will have difficulties in all these areas of interacting with others, even in representing Srila Prabhupada. But we shouldn't be discouraged. We should keep trying because, as Prabhupada says, to give one's life to Krishna is never a mistake. We do need to come to this level that Pundarik Prabhu quoted at that verse in the beginning, the Rupa Goswami holds up as a standard for interactions with others. We need to come to that stage. But as we struggle to get there, don't think that we're making a mistake. And hopefully, if we have that attitude about ourselves, that we are trying to come to that level, even though we are full of faults, Then people will perceive that also, and they won't get the impression that, oh, these people are just proud, holier than thou, trying to tell everybody else what to do without watching their own behavior. Because, as pointed out in the verse today, we must act very cautiously and sagaciously, because even if we are Kartavirya Arjuna, Lord Parasaram, or Jamadagni, our interactions with others can cause us to have to suffer the results of sinful activities. So are there any comments or questions about these points? Pushkar?
Explain how Lord Parasaram became under the... He's incarnation, he's still under the... It's just similar like Lord Balaram doing something. And
yeah, well, you know, the thing is that when Trivikrama Prabhu gave class a few days ago, he was talking like that, you know, how, you know, like, Parasaram, he had to, you know, suffer a little bit. I thought, you know, why is he saying like that? You know, but here he is, right here. Prabhupada's saying that even Lord Parasaram, you know, in his interactions with killing Kartavirya Arjuna, he had to, you know, he says, although it was not very, he says, he killed, Parasaram was also infected by sin because of killing King Kartavirya, although this was not very offensive. So it wasn't very offensive, but anything, you know, can be, cause us to have to suffer. So that's what Prabhupada's warning us against. Yeah.
But in line, I wanted to mention, there's a couple letters that you could have included in one part of your talk, like, when that Yanov boy was kept by the devotees, somehow or other he was shielded and moved around North America, then his mother or father or something, he was a young boy under age, and one of his parents or somebody, it must have been favorable, but the Prabhupada was so alarmed, he wrote a letter, you know, saying, I cannot believe that you are risking our entire reputation you should send this boy back immediately. And they didn't even do it. I don't know, or if they did, it was too late, because later on there was a big lawsuit, you probably well know about that. Mm-hmm. And so probably they would just, what seemed a harmless thing, oh, this boy wants to be Krishna conscious, but
Well, that's our inexperience. Pundarikpur.
All thinking, there's exceptions to the rule also, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites the example of Shukadev Goswami pointing out the faults of Vena, that sometimes for the purpose of instruction, faults should be pointed out. Of course, Krishna does this in the Bhagavad Gita, Namam Duskritono Mudha. I'm sure Prabhupada quoted that sometimes. Krishna, I'm not saying your nonsense, Krishna says. But at the same time, there's Srila Prabhupada, there's a nice statement, I think it's Chitraketu or maybe Dhruva Maharaj, that Srila Prabhupada says that one should be very careful about criticizing others, or he may make the great mistake of criticizing a devotee. So again, in line with your topic, this class, that he gives that distinction between criticizing a devotee is much more serious than just, I mean, especially if there is faults to be pointed out for instruction purpose, as in the case of Shukadev Goswami pointing out the faults of Vena Maharaj. But if one finds faults with a devotee, that's very serious offense, mm-hmm. More serious offense.
Okay, thank you. Madan Mohan?
When Krishna was present, he there was still that those different pastimes, Aristasura, when Krishna killed Aristasura, he said that he should atone for that. You know, so, I mean, there's...
The gopis said that like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it does seem like whatever standards they set by the exemplary...
But what was the result of Krishna being... the gopis finding fault with Krishna and then for his killing of Arjuna. So what was the result of that? Shyamaku and Radhika in the most sacred places in the universe. So there's a little different, you know, when Krishna is pointed out like this.
Well, the principle.
Yeah. Anything else? Yes, Jajivan Prabhu. Another very jolly person. Whenever I see Jajivan Prabhu, I always feel very jolly. So.
Several things Thank you, Prabhu, for your nice class. Several things come to mind when you were speaking. One is we were, not many devotees know, we were walking with Prabhupada in Caracas, and this is related to Good Morning. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are jogging, and Venezuelans are jogging and doing some exercise. So a man was coming, and he looked at Prabhupada, and he said, "Buenos dias," which means good morning in Spanish, you know. So Prabhupada looks to Hridayanandamurti and says, "What did he say? What does it mean?" He said, "Prabhupada, that means good morning." So Prabhupada said, "Ah, buenos dias," in Spanish. Prabhupada said in Spanish. So even translated in other places, it's valid. What brings to mind of your class was the humility verse of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he says, "Amanina manadena," that we should offer all respects to others. But part of the verse is, "Amani," we should not be looking for respect for ourselves. So part of a devotee's life is he's so humble that he is not looking for respect, and therefore he is able to respect others truly, you know. Mm-hmm. Not only a socially, you know, which is nice to be socially a gentleman like that, but Prabhupada's gentlemanliness was a little beyond what socially accepted as a gentleman. So he was mm-hmm. like a Vaishnava gentleman, which is a very humble person, you know. And another thing that comes to mind, and you were mentioning about service, how service enables us to be humble, you know. And this pariprashnena sevaya concept, that I can clear things up if I have a service attitude, came to mind. You know, that, so that we can understand Krishna consciousness if we have that service attitude, which comes from offering all respects to others and not looking for respect for ourselves. You know, that's just some things that came to my mind while you were speaking.
Well, that's actually good, because in Mayapur every year, those of you who don't know, Jagjivan Prabhu often has to handle situations that are dispute resolution for the GBC. And that's actually a good key, you know, for doing that, is that trying to get people in the idea, in the service mood, with that kind of frame of mind, it's easier for them to resolve their disputes if they have that
exactly.
Kind of thing.
One thing I always say to devotees before I even start is that there's an incongruity in the fact that I may have to judge someone who I consider my Prabhu or my superior. So please, I ask for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that there's some incongruity in this relationship, because, you know, I have to be in a position to judge them, which I shouldn't be doing. So mm-hmm. it actually helps me.
Well, if you have the position, the mentality of service, then it helps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
very anything else? Anyone? Yes, Mother.
That there is a system, like he was talking about his service in Mayapur, and then we have the larger system, because you could say the Yamadutas are kind of like the major fault finder. They go out and find the fault in people and deal with it. And so it's a little tricky, because we see things as parents and teachers and other people that we want to make right. So it's not that things are not happening that could be better. So there's that balance of knowing that in the grander picture, things will ultimately be dealt with. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, well, I think that the idea of, in this discussion about having with service, and even Pundarik's comments in terms of, yes, there is a distinction made, and corrections are made when the faults are seen. But even the guru, he takes that as in a service to his disciple, not necessarily to exploit or just put oneself in a position of superiority. But when this mood of service is there, then it can be corrected. And I think that that's the key to it not becoming if we have to criticize, we have to find fault in others, if we have to do that, if we do it as a service, it makes a distinction between just doing it in terms of gossiping or whatever else, another kind of form. Okay, so we're a little over time. We'll end there. Antara Srimad Bhagavatam, Vijay. Thank you.